Support for Connecticut East this week comes from Reality Interactive, helping your business create seamless and memorable digital experiences for your customers. Find out more at realityi.com. Connecticut Council on Problem Gambling, here to help individuals and families affected by gambling-related harm. Call 1-888-789-7777 or visit our website at ccpg.org. Thames at Mitchell College, a holistic on-campus program that helps high school graduates prepare for college through personal transformation. Go to mitchell.edu/Thames to learn more. And Day Kimball Health, nationally recognized by Leapfrog, Becker's, and the American Heart Association. Day Kimball Health, healthcare in motion. Learn more at daykimball.org. She's a talented musician, music therapist, foodie, and host of a popular radio show in the region. We talk with Ruth Hartunian Allenbaugh, host of WILI's Ravings and Cravings, about her life, work, and her passions. Plus, we take a look at other stories making the headlines from around the region. This is Connecticut East This Week. Hello, I'm Brian Scott Smith. It's always good to get invited on other shows to talk about your work life and your passions. And 2 months ago, I was invited on WILI's weekly food show Ravings and Cravings, hosted by Ruth Hartunian Allenbaugh. We had a great time eating food, talking about cultural food differences, and eating more food again. I promised to have Ruth on my show in return as a thank you, but also to talk more about her and her life and passions in a different setting. So recently, I visited Ruth at her home. And yes, there was food and drink, and we chatted about her family, her early years, her passion for music and food, and her role as host on Ravings and Cravings. But Ruth, welcome to Connecticut East This Week. It's been 2 months since you very kindly had me on Ravings and Cravings, and we're going to be talking about that a little bit later, because that is a fabulous show on WILI. Mm-hmm. So we agreed to have you back. Sorry it's taken so much time to get you back.
It's okay.
On the podcast, but you are here. So we're going to find out a little bit more about Ruth. Like I said, we'll talk about the food aspect of it. But just give us a little bit of background, because although you're from Wisconsin originally, your dad was from overseas. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Dad came here on a slow boat from Beirut, Lebanon. And oh, thank you for letting me be here today. You know, I love being behind a microphone. I am the fan of a microphone.
You are.
Yes, I am. So yes, he came here from Beirut, Lebanon on a slow boat. From what I understand, he was on there for about a month. I have one of his big trunks that he carried all his worldly possessions in. And so he was met by distant relatives from Weehawken, New Jersey. Met him at the shores. He made his way to Wisconsin. There's a big Armenian community there in Waukegan. And, you know, Armenians like Armenians to marry Armenians. And so he's looking for a wife. He met my mom, and there we go. The rest is history. So I call my husband, in Armenian, he's called an Odar. Anybody who's not an Armenian is an Odar.
So I would be an Odar. Then.
You would be an Odar. I am called a Hai, or like from Hayastan. So I am an Armenian, and everyone else is not. That's kind of the short version. He originally came here to secure a space so that he could bring his mom here and have her sickness treated. She was full of cancer, and by the time she got here, it was just too far gone, and she wanted to die on her own soil, but he pressed his parents, and so they both came. So anyway, they both died here and are buried in an Armenian cemetery in South Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
So tell us a little bit about Wisconsin, because of course it is, I like to call it cheese country, but the correct, as you were telling me before we started recording, it was like it's dairy country.
Yep, America's Dairyland.
What was it like growing up in Wisconsin?
You know, I loved where I grew up. I love the town I grew up in. I am the product of public schools. When I think public schools were awesome, my grade school teachers were like my family. I lived half a block away from the school so I could come home at lunch. My mom could look out the door and make sure I got to the playground. When I was done, I had so many opportunities in music, and the music program was so excellent, even from grade school on. And when I hit junior high in high school, my goal was to play as many things as I could. And so, you know, we need a bass trombone player for marching band. I was like, hand raised. We need blah, blah, blah. I mean, I took harp lessons for a while. That was my one of my dad's Christmas presents to me. I got to play the harp for a while. I've had a lot of opportunities. So it was a great community. It was a friendly place to grow up in. We had a great candy store a block away from my house. Best Polish sausage ever, ever, ever. That generation is gone, sadly. It was a great community. It still is in some ways, but you know, the communities get older. But where I grew up in Cudahy, it was a great place to grow up.
Just quickly talking about your family a little bit more. I mean, was music a big thing for your family? Because we're going to be getting into the music side, because as you just said, you're very musical. We're going to find out a little bit more about that, because actually it's a career of yours as well. Mm-hmm. So was the family very musical? Is that where that came from?
So my mom, interestingly enough, she was in a sanitarium for about a year because she had tuberculosis and she had a collapsed lung. But she was first trumpet player in her high school band, even with that compromise. She was really the only musical person. She played the piano by ear. She wrote songs.
Wow.
You know, anybody can write a song, Brian. Anybody can. You know, if you can speak words or write them down, you can always put them to music. My dad, he brags about being very musical because he played a cassette player, the radio, and the record player. So that was the era that he came from. But he didn't have any musical background at all. So it was just the two of them.
And then, of course, food is a big thing, obviously.
Pretty big.
Yeah, I think that's quite an Armenian thing, isn't it? Isn't food like a big thing for Armenian families?
This is how Armenians speak their love and care to people. So when I participated in the musical Armenia project, it was before COVID. So I went to Armenia. I auditioned for this thing for a whole month, and it was an immersive experience. Armenian history, Armenian music history, Armenian fine arts, listening to amazing jazz ensembles, ballets, orchestras, traveling all over the country, looking for people who had the same last name as me, because I figure I'm probably related to them, but I don't even know if I have relatives there. So I felt like I found a piece of myself when I went there, because the Armenian people are very welcoming people. No one's ever a stranger. Everyone's a friend. You open your door, you exercise your hospitality, and it is a part of the culture. It's not like a contrived thing. It's just a very natural thing. So I felt like when I was there, I was like, oh, so that's why I'm like that. Because my mom was very much like that. And my grandfather, he had a bakery when he was in Beirut. And so he was baking all the time. And my dad said he was always bailing his father out of his financial woes because my grandfather couldn't bear to see people go hungry. So, you know, he was wanting to feed people. Yeah. So when he came to this country, they didn't use food processors. My family made large amounts of things. We never made small. And we're only a family of four or five people, right? So if we're chopping parsley, grandpa's chopping parsley by hand, chopping onions by hand. Everything is by hand. So it's a very, and we made baklava from scratch. We made the syrup part. We made the dough part. We rolled that stuff out. It was like a day's worth of activity. So food is a time consuming thing, but it was a thing that it was how you showed that you love people.
We should probably explain to some of the listeners, just in case they've not heard of baklava, that is a superb dessert.
Oh, you think so?
It is a superb dessert, and it's very, very thin layers of pastry, which I'm guessing is incredibly time consuming to do. And to do that by hand is amazing.
Took a whole day to make 2 9 by 13 hands of that stuff. And of course, the chop, we did walnuts by hand, chop walnuts by hand, no food processors or anything like that.
So fast forward, you grow up, you graduate, you've got all of these skills. You're a music therapist. Tell us what that means.
So I think the best way to explain what music therapy is music therapy is music is a tool to accomplish certain goals. So whether they have to do with mental health or physical health, whether they have to do with rehabilitation, whether they have to do with pain management, having babies, anywhere you can take music with you and it can make your situation more pleasant, an opportunity for greater insight into life and living. It just has the potential to do a lot of good. And so that's how I would explain what music therapy is. Whereas education is learning how to do something, learning how to play, learning how to read the notes, the theory, that kind of stuff. Does that make sense?
It does. And I'm just curious to know, obviously, you're a very talented lady. We know that. Why did you go in that direction? I mean, you had all of that musical experience, but what drove you in the direction down the music therapy thing?
Yeah, that is very interesting because I was originally thinking I would like to be a conductor. So I would like buy all the books about conducting and I would learn the techniques. And then I thought, no, I think I'd like to be a piano performer. And then I thought about pursuing that. And I thought, well, I'll have no family life and I'll be traveling all the time. And that didn't sound good to me. Then I thought I would like to go into veterinary medicine because I love dogs and I've never really had one. But I thought, oh, I could be a veterinarian, specialize in dogs. I don't think so. That's not happening. And then I went to an event in Colorado Springs, and one of the people who was there presenting, we watched a movie about his life, and he is a music therapist. I never heard of it then. This is when I was like 17. Watched the movie, lights were all off, thousands of people in the auditorium, and then we hear music. And we hear someone singing. And it was a moment in time that was so powerful because the person whose life story we just watched in movie form was on stage. And that just, it pulled the heart right out of my chest. And I knew at that moment, that is what I was going to do. And so that's what I pursued.
That's an incredible story. And you're getting a little bit emotional. So it's obviously still affects you all these years later, which is lovely to see.
I that moment, it really was a holy moment for me. It was, because personally, I was extremely depressed and I was just didn't care about anything. Just didn't. I didn't care what my next step was. I didn't even care to be in the crowd. I mean, I was fortunate to have gotten to go, but I was like, nothing mattered. Nothing mattered. And at that moment, something mattered. It was learning about what music therapy was.
What would you say are some of the highlights since you became a music therapist? Obviously, mm-hmm. You've been a music therapist now, continue to be a music therapist for many years. What have been some of the highlights that, have happened in the course of your career to mm-hmm. date? I mean, obviously, there's many. So it's always that sort of like, which ones do I pull out sort of thing. But there must have been some real moments where you thought, wow, I'm so glad I've been able to make a difference.
I was playing actually at a church, and music shows up in different ways, and playing, sometimes at churches they have a song for everybody to leave with and stuff like that. And so I was playing that song, and when I was done, I looked up and a whole bunch of people were sitting in the pews to my right, and they wanted me to keep playing. And so I asked them what they wanted, because that is part of the key of being a music therapist, is that you cater to the people that you're working with, that you're serving, the people that you're wanting to be a blessing to. And so people started calling out these songs, and I know all these songs. So I just started playing them. And next thing you know, people are crying. They're getting emotional about things. And then when they're leaving, I had to pry them out of their seats because I thought, I can't be here forever. They're hugging me and saying, thank you so much. To me, it was like they had a cool drink of water on a hot day. They were hungry people, and the music met a need. And they didn't even have to sing the words to the songs. They just had to hear something that was familiar to them. That was a moment. Another moment, when I worked at the State Psychiatric Hospital in Middletown, these were the days when the smoking section was in the same room that you're in. I was on a co-ed unit, and it was an admission unit. And so there's a lot of instability. And there were, say, 25 people or so in a music therapy group. And it was, these were opportunities to try to find a common thread with everyone and to bring everyone together and to diffuse things. And we were doing this song. You probably know, You've Got to Change Your Evil Ways. You've got to change your evil ways, baby, before I stop loving you. You've got to change. Anyway, it was one of those great songs, right? Because it seemed appropriate for the moment. Because when you go in as a music therapist, you have your bag and you have a half a dozen things in there, and then you assess the situation, and then you figure out, where do I meet everyone, and then where do I take them, right? So I meet them at a pretty volatile point. I'm using that song, and there's a part of it where you're exclaiming, no, 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 repeatedly, no, 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 no. And I thought, I'm going to change it to yes. So let's get a few rounds of no's in there, and then let's get a few rounds of yes in there, because I want them to calm down more without medication, just with the music. And they took it, and it was awesome. It was like magic, because they went with me and things ended well. I don't know, the rest of the day could have gone poorly, but in that space of time, it was a good hour.
It is incredible how powerful music can move people. Mm. Because we've all got like a song in our life, or maybe a couple of songs, but also music that we associate with events, whether they're good or bad, with family, etc. It almost is the best therapy. I mean, talking is a good therapy, but music really does have that ability to move people in different ways, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that's a really good point, Brian, because people can talk their ways out of a paper bag. I can say something to you, but in my heart, heart, I am just like dying or I'm hurting. So music is, because of the nonverbal aspect of it, that's what makes it so unique, because it blows past the smokescreen of verbal and it goes into more like the soul of who a person is and where they really are. I know. Can I ask you, do you have any favorite tunes at all that you...
Sadly, I lost my father fairly recently, and he wasn't a musical man, but there were certain things that he liked. Mm-hmm. And so there's a couple of songs that I remember from him, and one of them is from the musical Cats, and it's called Memories.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a very haunting song.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And so whenever I hear that, that reminds me of him. So yeah, there are sort of like songs. Yeah, absolutely. There's songs that, you know, are in my head that do things that evoke memories. You know, good and bad. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and it's nice to sometimes just sit quietly, isn't it? You know, and to listen and to reflect with some of that music as well.
It is. I remember one person I had worked with when I was at the psychiatric hospital. He was a really big guy, and he was probably 6'4", probably weighed a good 300 pounds. You know, the doctor wrote the order, you know, he should have music therapy services a couple times a week for half hour. His favorite song was Bryan Adams' Everything I Do It All For You. This was before the days when we had the karaoke and all the machines and stuff. And so I would just play that song, and he would just wail on that thing. And it was, and at that time he was a human, but for that brief moment it was like, you are a human.
It is incredible. And that became, I mean, that sort of song became an anthem, really, didn't it? I mean, it was such a popular song.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk to you, obviously, about Ravings and Cravings, because it would be bad if we didn't mention fabulous show, which, of course, is my show follows your show on
WII. Yeah, but you were there first, so, you know, I give you credit. I'm a newbie.
How did it happen for you? How did it? Just talk to us about it, because we understand, obviously, the food aspect, you know, why you are the perfect host for that, because of all of your, you know, your foodiness. But how did it come about?
I like that word, foodiness, Brian. Yeah, I like that. I may have to adopt that. Is
good.
That okay?
Absolutely.
All right. I'll give credit where it's due, though. Okay. So a number of years ago, probably 7 or 8 years ago, I asked the new owner of the local newspaper if I could write stories about food. And so long story short, he gave me permission to do that. And I did that for 4 years. And then I thought, you know, I think, and so it was weekly, going into a restaurant, getting to know the owner. To me, the best part of it was, I mean, as much as I like food, it's the connection relationally, because food is a social thing, right? It's a social thing. So to me, that was, you know, establishing that relationship and knowing that I am going to make you look good. That is my only goal. And I have 350 words to do it in. So I did that for 4 years. And I thought, now I think my time is up. And then I pursued radio and I applied for a couple of grants as far as funding, because I thought, you know, I should pay myself. Is that an idea or what? And then nobody bid at that. And even though Click actually wrote me into one of their grants too, saying, you know, part of the perk you get for joining Click is you get to have a radio spot with Ruth, right? That didn't fly either. So I thought, you know what? The season's over. I'm not going to pursue that, and for nothing. So Jim Bolano in economic development here in Willimantic approached me, and he said, would you like to do a radio show? As long as half the shows are about local food, Wyndham Economic Development will fund it, and we'll even give you mileage. So the station gets paid. I get my miles. It's not a paid job per se, but that was my point of entry for that. And so I did that. And then they said the funds are gone. And I thought, my year is up. I'm going to be like, I'll limp my way to the 1 year point. And then out of the blue, Colin was like, no, you know, we want this to keep going. And I don't know what he did. He made something happen. And so I'm still doing the weekly shows. When I first started, I was only doing the audio and taking a gizmo around. You have more fancy equipment, though. You have nice equipment. I was taking a little gizmo.
But you do video, though, because, of course, when I was on the show 2 months ago, I mean, that's the other thing, which is great, is that people get to listen to it live, obviously, when it goes out.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, a couple of days later, if they choose to, then they can go and watch it, which is always good, because then you get to see, you know, because you're always testing food and you can hear all the yum yums and the munchies going on, sort of thing. But then to be able to go and have a look at the video, it was fabulous.
Yep, you get the audio, you get the video. It's on the Charter cable station. I post the stories from my Facebook page, Ravings and Cravings, and hopefully, you know, people find each other.
Now, obviously, you know a lot, so you go out and find these people. But are you happy for people to contact you as well, so that you can take a look? So, I mean, just give it a plug. You let me give my show a plug when I was on 2 months ago. So give it a plug.
Sure. So, business owner who has anything to do with food. I mean, even beyond a restaurant, you know, there are so many aspects in the restaurant industry, hospitality, so many logistics, you know, there's legislation. It's like so many layers of things. I'm happy to go anywhere with somebody as long as they have something to do with food. I invite people who have their cottage license or who are part of a legit something because I just want to keep things on the up and up. I mean, I love people who bake out of their home. You know, my daughter had a baking business when she was here and I homeschooled. And so she had Rosie's Bodacious Bakery and she would go around and sell her wares. But we would say, you know, it's made in a home kitchen. You have to understand that. I'm not going to go there with the Ravings and Cravings. So if you have a business or whatever, you're welcome to reach out to me on Ravings and Cravings on Facebook. You can Google my name. You could probably find everything you want to know about me. It's a scary world out there. But anyway, that's what it is. And the shows are on every Monday, like Brian said, from 5:05, I think, till about 5:30. And then you're on after with Connecticut East, right?
I am.
Yep. And so that's how it has been. So 1 year, it was 1 year around September 19th. It's been a little over a year now.
Well, long may it continue because it is a fabulous show. Well, I've never eaten so much on live on radio for when we did the show, and it was just superb. It's been great getting to know you, and it's great to return the favor. So, Ruth, thanks ever so much for being on Connecticut East this week.
Thank you so much, Brian. Appreciate it.
And if you want to listen to Ruth's show on WILI 1400 AM or 95.3 FM, it's on every Monday, starting at just after 5 p.m. And they also video the show too, and you can watch a few days later on YouTube by searching for WILI Radio. Connecticut East this week is made possible by Reality Interactive, helping Fortune 500 businesses connect with their customers through innovative digital tools to help foster strong relationships and deliver data-driven seamless solutions. We help you create memorable digital experiences to bring your brand to consumers in insightful ways. Find out how we can help your digital transformation today at RealityEye, that's RealityEye.com. Thames at Mitchell College, a college transition program on Mitchell's waterfront campus in New London. Mitchell offers a culture of radical possibilities where students with learning or processing differences can thrive, easing into college with supportive faculty and a strong social network. Within this tight-knit living and learning community, Thames students build executive functioning skills, earn college credit, learn strategies for independence, and experience transformative growth. Learn more at Mitchell.edu. And
it's time for the quiet corner to make some noise. Some Day Kimball Health noise. Largest employer in our region kind of noise. Day Kimball Health serves more than 125,000 people, offers cardiology, orthopedics, and oncology specialties. It's having the region's only comprehensive and accredited breast center kind of noise. We're nationally recognized by LeapFrog, Becker's, and the American Heart Association. Day Kimball Health. Healthcare in motion.
The Connecticut Council on Problem Gambling is a nonprofit organization which, through advocacy, prevention, and education, is here to support individuals and families who are impacted by problem gambling. Our helpline, 1-888-789-7777, is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We also have live chat and tech support through our website, www.ccpg.org.
Time now for a look at other stories making headlines this week. More than 50 local business and nonprofit leaders from northeastern Connecticut attended a legislative breakfast recently to hear from their elected officials and to tell them what they are up against in the region. One of the topics raised was the lack of consistent and affordable childcare in the region and how it's having a damaging effect on the local economy. Democratic State Senator May Flexer of the 29th District said she understands all too well the knock-on effects this situation has.
I hear time and time again, from the large organizations that you're talking about to the small businesses that are represented in this chamber as well, that they often can't fill positions because people can't find access to reliable, consistent childcare. People can't find 9-to-5 slots. There are childcare providers in our region who have been caretakers of our children for decades who are on the brink of closing their doors because they just can't make ends meet.
Other topics raised were the lack of affordable housing in the region and financial concerns for Day Kimball Healthcare, who are struggling because of low Medicaid reimbursement rates in the state. Democratic State Senator Kathy Austin, who chairs the powerful Appropriations Committee, said she's trying to solve the problem of affordable housing, but grants from the Connecticut Housing Finance Rights Authority aren't being made available to Eastern Connecticut.
Nobody in New London County, nobody in Talland, and nobody in Windham County deserves to even get a chance to apply for these grants. They took us completely off the market from applying for these grants. I have a chance to try to rectify that in the budget this year because I've asked. And the commissioner of the Department of Housing says nobody really wants to live in Eastern Connecticut. These are exact quotes.
The legislative breakfast was organized by the Northeastern Connecticut Chamber of Commerce. A new report says Black LGBTQ plus youths are seeing more equality in Connecticut and the U.S., but as Edwin J. Vieira from the Connecticut News Service reports, it doesn't always mean greater opportunity.
The Human Rights Campaign reports around 82% of kids were out to someone in their immediate family. This shows a growing comfort level they have in being who they are, but the findings also indicate this doesn't always translate into acceptance and leads to concern. Ryan J. Watson, a University of Connecticut professor and researcher for the report, says a key takeaway is how Black LGBTQ plus youth face exclusion on several fronts.
Maybe their Black African-American relatives, friends, are in particularly unsupportive of them being a sexual gender minority, and so they kind of have stigma from that side. And then also the kids in this report are reporting they feel excluded by white LGBTQ youth and populations.
Almost 59% of kids said they've experienced some form of parental rejection, and around 3/4 have dealt with racism from the LGBTQ plus community. The report suggests parents can educate themselves about sexuality and gender identity, as well as use the name and pronouns their kids use to define themselves. I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
The University of Connecticut released details recently identifying the name of a student who died after falling from the south garage at the UConn campus in Storrs. The student was 20-year-old Jackson Carnero from Milford, Massachusetts. In a statement, the university said that UConn police found no criminal elements in the circumstances of his death and that the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner will determine its cause and manner. The school sent out a campus-wide email to the UConn community informing them of the passing of Carnero. Carnero began his UConn career in the fall 2022 semester. He was a digital media design major in the School of Fine Arts. A mass and burial for Carnero was held on March 13th in Milford, Massachusetts. In the day this week, a crowd of residents who want the town of Montville to build a $2.2 million animal control facility will have to wait until June to see whether or not the project will be approved after town councillors voted 6-1 to delay action on the shelter until they know whether they will be successful in obtaining a state grant, which they won't know until May. For the past 2 weekends, Anne Golan had stood outside the Stop and Shop on Route 32 asking people to sign a petition to build a new animal control facility. She and others collected almost 1,200 signatures, which were presented to the council. 25 local businesses had the petition in their stores. Becky Morris, owner of Albright Canines, a dog training, grooming and daycare business, presented the signatures to the council, saying they were a sampling of what our townspeople want. She and Golan handed out purple ribbons and buttons that said Build Our Shelter Montville CT to those who attended the meeting. She said she hoped the signatures would demonstrate to the council and Mayor Leonard Bunnell that residents want a new shelter. Residents say they want the new shelter to replace the current dilapidated building at 225 Maple Avenue, which over the past several years has been cited for numerous violations of state animal shelter guidelines. That's all from us for this edition. Do send us your questions and story ideas to the show via our website at connecticut-east.com or Facebook or Twitter at Connecticut East and on Instagram at Connecticut East This Week. And you can listen to the show again on our social platforms on demand and by asking your smart speaker to play Connecticut East This Week podcast. And please like, follow and share on your social media too. I'm Brian Scott Smith. Thank you for listening.